an apology from Honorable Manuela. She's got other commitments. She's attending the meeting on cooperative governance and traditional affairs. That is the three apologies received in a written format. I put it to the committee. Can we accept the apologies? Thank you for that. Honorable members, we attended the meeting on the 20th of September when we joined the Standing Committee on Finance and received a briefing on the amendments to the taxation laws in front of us this afternoon. Now, in terms of procedure, we must go through this to have this formal meeting, to have a formal briefing. You received the documentation at that meeting as well as briefing documents. But I want to take you back to the questions you put to the delegation from SARS that made the briefing and did the briefing with this committee and informed us. I want you to listen very carefully, as well as our team from SARS. Because the legislation in front of us actually gives effect to the tax proposals as highlighted in the 2011 budget review to broaden the tax base. Now, that's a document that was tabled in February when the Minister of Finance tabled the national budget. Just to take you back. The questions that was put to SARS in terms of this legislation in front of us, and I'm going to read it. Seven questions. How does legislation would assist and promote entrepreneurship? Issue about entrepreneurship, and whether there was any analysis that proved its effectiveness. Right. The second one. How individuals would benefit from the medical scheme deductions. Three. If courts would be able to judge tax neutrality. Please put the phone on silent. Further clarity was needed on the term tax leakage and a limit on interest deductions. Whether any lessons were learned from the suspension of Section 45. What lessons was learned from the suspension of Section 45? Committee wanted to know if the changes to the legislation would have any impact on the fiscus. The last question. Further clarity on sections 45 to 47. There was extensive discussions also in the media on this, as institutions and organizations also ask questions and put their views forward. So that was the questions that we tabled at the meeting on the 20th of September, that's eight weeks and a few days ago. To our team of SAS, just for record purposes, introduce your whole team and then you may take us through.
It's
a very old room this in this whole institution.
Yeah, but it's a nice one. I like this room a lot better. I feel more important for some reason. I'm not sure why. I like to feel important.
You're welcome.
Just several things. I'm going to have to apologize. Because the schedules got moved around, SARS was not able to attend this meeting. I will be able to be here for about an hour, so I'm going to approach all the core questions. But I'm from Treasury. I'm Keith Engel. I'm in charge of the Legal Tax Design Unit. And you've seen me before, I think. With me is two of my colleagues, Henny Lambrecht, who is one of my drafters, and he knows the individual issues rather well, and he'll present those if you need be. He also knows some of the incentives and the VAC. And then man Charles McCullough, he's my treaty guy, very important. He will deal with the international tax issues. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to deal with the business tax issues first and open it up to questions, and five of your questions here are dealing with 45 in the business. So that's what I will fundamentally deal with. I will deal with the other two questions as well, just at the outset, just so you know that I've tried to deal with them and you can raise them again. I think the first thing that was asked is, how does this legislation deal with entrepreneurship and the proof of effectiveness? This is an interesting question. And I think one of the issues that's there is, well, what is entrepreneurship? And I think what you're thinking of is small business entrepreneurship. That's what I think you're going for, or medium-sized business entrepreneurship. And the difficulty there is that there are different kinds of businesses. So I'm just going to focus on small business. Let me say that the bill does do some things for small business. What the bill does in the main is the micro business turnover tax has been made more generous. So you will see that, I think it's in some of the later slides, that we've upped the thresholds. I'll just have to jump to the very end of this, and then I'm going to talk about small business generally. Right now, there are certain tables for small business turnover. And right now, for example, up to $100,000 of turnover is tax-free, and under the revised model, it would be $150,000 that will be tax-free. That the max, the rates for the micro business turnover tax will be dropped by 1% across the board. These people are playing with it so it's more useful. You can get that a little better. I'm not quite sure how these things work. So you just see it a little better. Okay, now you've really thrown me off, but that's fine. So that looks a lot better. So one of the things is, let me just talk about small business for a minute. Let me just give you some perspective. Tax has not a lot of effect on small business generally. And why? Because most small businesses don't make a profit. So if you're going to talk about the income tax is a very small part of the small business world. The biggest issue for small business is the cost of compliance. Because oftentimes they don't make a profit, but even if they do make a profit, it's not a lot. And the difficulty is they don't want to have to hire expensive law firms and accounting firms to calculate their profit. And so several years ago, we invented something called the microbusiness turnover tax as a simplified income tax, where all you have to do is look at the gross income. The take-up has not been very high in that regard, and so we've actually improved the formula. So instead of having a turnover tax that maxes out at 7% and now maxes out at 6%, the first $150,000 is exempt instead of the first $100,000. But most importantly, under the prior regime, you could not elect this regime if you had the VAT. If you took the VAT, you would not be allowed to have this relief. And we're now saying you can apply for the VAT and keep this relief. And the reason why is a lot of small businesses live off of government tenders. So, again, they need the VAT in order to be eligible for the government tenders. So if you did, you took out the VAT, you took them out as well. So that was something that we did in this regime. But overall, I must say that the tax system is struggling with the finance issue, with the small business issue. Because most tax is the last issue on their list. The real issue for small business is finance, where are they going to get their money? Two, the cost of regulatory compliance. And those issues really fall outside of the tax system. Tax is only a marginal lever. So we're providing a little bit of relief here. We provide some other small reliefs. But at the end of the day, tax is really not a big issue in this area. You really need to find it elsewhere. A lot of times it might be with DTI and their one-stop shop. But I do think we need to have a better set of solutions overall for small business. And it's got to be a multidisciplinary solution at the end of the day. I mean, we've done some things here. We've helped them. but I don't think at the end of the day these are going to be a big change. And I think our problem is we've had to go a little longer strategy. So I know what people's views are on that. Second issue that's come up that's a generic issue is on medical schemes and what is it doing. And if you look at your medical schemes, and Henny will talk about this more later, is that we converted it from a deduction to a credit. And what your schemes are, by converting it from a deduction to a credit, what we said is effectively everybody is going to get the same subsidy for a medical scheme contribution regardless of income. So right now, if I'm a rich person, I'm in the 40% bracket, I get a higher subsidy than a person in the 18% bracket. What the rules will say is you will get a set credit against your tax regardless of your income bracket. And therefore, everybody will get an equal subsidy for their medical scheme contribution. Effectively, what it will mean is if you're above the 30% bracket, you're not going to get as much as you used to, but if you're below the 30% bracket, you'll get more. So it ultimately helps, just look at the brackets, it sort of comes in about, if you're making about $200,000 or more, you'll find that you're either equal or a little worse off. If you're making a little less than $200,000, you're a little better off. So it's shifted. But everybody gets an equal subsidy, and that's all we're trying to propose there. So those are just two basic questions. I don't know if you want to take questions on that, or I'll just continue. Okay? Now, the issue of the 45, it's my life's work. I mean, I entered into this involuntarily, and it's been quite a journey. Treasury normally doesn't like to get into anti-avoidance, but look, this is part of our job. And one of the difficult things, and it was asked about the fiscal balance, is that when we set the fiscal balance, we were assuming that there was no major leakages to the system. So when February came, there was no mention of the 45, because while we were aware of a few things, we were planning to deal with those separately. And what the 45 business began to really get into roll after the budget. And the real issue is we had to protect the fiscus against unforeseen revenue losses. And that's why it came out in legislation, wasn't in the budget, and really it wasn't part of our model, and the key purpose of the amendments was to make sure we didn't have to make that part of our model, so that we didn't lose revenue. But what is 45 all about? Well, forgetting all the numbers, what 45 is all about is leverage buyouts. So if you acquire a company and you want to take it over, well, what do you want to do? Well, where are you going to get the money? Well, you might have your own cash, you might use shares, or you borrow the money. And you borrow the money to buy shares, and when you're borrowing that money to buy shares, then you hopefully will take over the target company, and life will go on. The difficulty for us, and here's a typical deal what they look like, is that when you borrow money to acquire a target company, that if the borrowing is excessive, that borrowing will generate large amounts of interest deductions. So you might be in a situation where the company you're taking over is generating a profit of 50 million rand a year. But because you want to borrow the money to acquire the company, the borrowing might be so high that the interest wipes out the profits from the company for a period of 5 to 7 years. That's a lot of profits that are eliminated from the tax of the company. That means that every time you do one of these, you eliminate the company tax for a 5 to 7 year period. And then, in many of these deals, they reboot the transaction for another 5 to 7 years. So you can say goodbye to the fiscus, which is fine with them because they don't really want to pay us anyway, right? If they look at taxes, it costs the business. And what 45 was, this tool to facilitate leverage buyouts. That's all the 45 was. In order to do a leverage buyout and get the interest deduction, you needed to do it with the 45. So that's the essentially where the problem was. Now, what is a 45? A 45 is just a rollover transaction. So to go back, I'm jumping a little bit here. Your typical 45 was designed to say, I have a group of companies, and all the companies are one economic unit, and I want to move the assets around in a group of companies. And since moving assets around in a group of companies was not really profitable for the shareholders or generating a loss, we would let you move the assets around, and basically it would be viewed as a non-event. There'd be no gain or loss, and when you sold the assets out of the group, you pick up gain. That was the purpose of 45, and that's what we announced in 2001. But like all things, we can announce things, and the lawyers begin looking, and the accountants and all the smart people, and they look at the words, and they say, oh, this is very interesting. And they start doing things that we never intended. So what they began to do in the model, and we can jump back to this model, was that what you would do in the 45 was acquiring company would acquire a target company in step one. And in step one, they would borrow money from bank one. And they would do that with what we call a bridging loan. And a bridging loan is a loan that lasts for 6 months to a year. That's what you did. You actually have two bridging loans in this. You have a mini bridging loan followed by an intermediate bridging loan. Okay? If I'm beginning to lose you and you're getting a little bored, well, I don't know. I'm just going to try to make it as interesting as I can. But the bottom line is acquiring company borrows the money for short term. Now, once you have that borrowing and that purchase, you set up the deal, but you need to set it up right. And what the real issue for you is if you borrow the money to buy the shares, you generally cannot deduct the interest. Because when you buy shares, shares do not generate income. They only generate tax-free dividends. So you want to borrow money and you want to get the interest deduction because it's an expense to your business. So once you've acquired the target company, you want to restructure the company. So acquiring sets up a new co. And then target merges into a new co in a basically a newly formed group. So you have a group connection, you do this transaction, assets move across, Bank 2 comes in and facilitates the second transaction. And all Bank 2 does is borrow the money to pay off Bank number 1. And if you do it that way, you turn non-deductible interest into deductible interest. That's all you do. And 45 allows you to do that. And the Revenue Service, in some rulings, said, gee, that's okay. You can do that. Even though if you borrow money to buy shares, it's bad, if you do it this way, it's good. So some people said, oh, that's kind of interesting, very nice. Well, the problem was that then people took that to the extremes because you should always take it to the extremes. If you are a tax practitioner, your goal is to save money for your client because that's why they pay you. Nobody pays you to pay the full amount of tax. They pay you to minimize the tax. So instead of borrowing a little bit of money, they borrow a whole lot of money. And that's what they borrow. The borrowing reaches such levels, they wipe out the profits for 5 to 7 years, followed by another 5 to 7 years. Now, arguably, you say, well, the bank is earning interest income. So the deduction on the one side matches the bank interest income on the other. So why is the Revenue Service complaining? Why are they so cranky? They're not here, but I'll represent them. And the problem is that typically the bank is an offshore party. It's not really a bank. It's a foreign person who's not taxed on the interest income or an exempt pension fund. Or an exempt long-term insurer. And those parties come in, and so you get a deduction on the one side and no income on the other. And so to give you that, that's what this is, what we've shown you before. Basic tax math. What every deal you want to do, if you look at all deals, the general tax system wants neutrality. So if one side gets a deduction, the other side has income. There's a loser on one side, a winner on the other. Fiscus is neutral. Nobody cares. Interest, deduction in one, income on the other. Dividends, the payor does not get a deduction, but the other side doesn't have income. Fiscus is neutral. Nobody cares. But nobody makes money. The tax planner is not happy. He's not as excited as his client. He wants to be in that third block. The borrower wants all the deductions to wipe out the target company's income, and then the creditor, the pension fund, the foreigner, and the insurance company, exempt pension fund, wants the exemption on the other side. That's what the whole battle is about. And once you can get a mismatch with a minus on the one side and a zero on the other, why have a little mismatch? Have a big one, a super big one. It's like printing money. If you can print money, why print 10 Rand if you can print 2,000 Rand? And if you can print 2,000 Rand, why don't you print 2 billion Rand? That's how the game goes. Then there's the other one where you're trying to avoid it and where you get fired, is if you pay interest, you don't get a deduction, and the other side is income. But that we're not talking about today. That's the zone where you won't work at ENS anytime soon. You stay out of that zone. So what happened was is the Treasury began picking up these 45 deals. And each one of them, they wipe out the fiscus. So we were not exactly sure what was going on. I'm telling you now more clearly what's going on. Back then, the Treasury was not fully aware of everything that was happening. And because we weren't fully aware of what was happening, we were becoming increasingly concerned by this. And we were also concerned by another transaction, which is over here. There was another transaction that was going on at the same time called the funnel scheme. And the purpose of the funnel was to generate money to go in a big circle and raid the fiscus. Because whenever you're a tax planner, the goal is to move money around in a big circle and then get rid of your tax. So you carry on your commercial business as before, and the tax man gets less, and everybody but the tax man is happy. And what these funnel schemes were doing was they were preference share schemes. You would buy a pref that would give you tax-free dividends, but in the backwoods somewhere would be an interest deduction to somebody else. And they were very clever in these schemes. The circle looked like the money went abroad for tax purposes, but for exchange control purposes, it stayed inside the country. That way they could arbitrage both systems. And basically, again, it was a way of printing money. So we were picking up elements of these schemes. Again, I know these schemes much more clearly today than I knew back then. The Revenue Service is picking up pieces. The Reserve Bank is picking up pieces. Taxpayers aren't talking. We said, what do we do? Well, we had some choices. Choice number one is do nothing. Lose lots of money. Okay? Choice number two, pretend to do something. Do nothing. Lose lots of money. Three, shut the whole business down and do what you have to do. Now, that was really what was disruptive, and people asked, what would I do again? Given those facts, it is very difficult because from a Treasury point of view, you have to understand several things. Taxpayers come to us. When they want an incentive, come in the room, give me lots of documents, anything I want to know. They have anomalies and problems, anything you want to know. If you're in the world of avoiding tax, what you do is you don't want to talk to me. You don't want to talk to Franz. You want to be in your back room somewhere, and you don't want to talk to anybody. And if SARS comes a-knocking, you want to tell them, I'll get back to you in a couple weeks. And that's what they do. And they will delay and delay and delay and delay as long as they can. And in these schemes, because you're seeing here the simple schemes, they set up layer after layer, box after box. So every time you open one box, you have to open another box. So each box takes 2 to 3 months. So you're not getting a clear picture of what's going on. And so effectively, when we suspended 45, we basically said, we know you're not going to come forward unless we force you to come forward. And so by shutting down 45, everybody was forced to come to the room and come to the table if they wanted to And it's not a way you want to operate, to be honest with you, because it's disruptive to business. But you're caught between two hard choices. And right now, we are in very difficult economic times, as you know. And on the one hand, we are facing issues. We have issues around expenditure. We have many things we have to achieve. But we have a falling set of revenues, which have still barely recovered from 2007 and 2008. On the other hand, while we're short on revenue, we don't want to be squeezing the middle class any further than they're being squeezed now. There comes a point where people are struggling out there, and you don't want to raise taxes. So what we don't want to do is we don't want to lose money involuntarily. And given those choices, we had to have the disruption. Now, there's a lot of issues around that disruption. And one of the concerns I had was the strength of the lobbying industry in this country. I'm fine with lobbyists. My concern is that the wealthy top law firms, top accounting firms, have the greatest access to the newspapers. I saw that even yesterday. They know who the people are in the news, and they call first. And whenever they're upset, the sky is falling. Now, for them, the sky is falling because they're generating huge fees. So the tax that, and there was one deal that the minister showed in July, the tax of 100 million savings, 25 to 30 million of that goes to all the advisors. Now, if that's what we want to subsidize, that's fine. But I don't think that's where this government wants to be. But the difficulty is that the richest people have the loudest voice and the quickest access. And unfortunately, many of the press will accept things at face value. And therefore, it created a firestorm because of that. Now, in all fairness, one of the problems that we had in the initial 45 was we hit a number of transactions that were pure intragroup, and some, a small group of BEE deals. But because we weren't as clear on the facts, we had to go overly broad and then pull back. And what you saw us do over July was meet with many, many taxpayers, and we pulled all the non-problematic transactions out. We allowed the intragroups, the long-held intragroups that had no leverage buyout. We made sure the BE deals went forward. And so we cleared that landscape. And what the landscape we have today in 45 is much narrower. What we've done here is we've said, if you want to do a 45, it's fine. Go ahead. No suspension. But if you want to borrow money to facilitate the 45, you can only get the interest deduction if you get our pre-approval. Now, that has led to the second round of discussions, and if you look at somebody, I think Stuart Theobald in the newspaper, I'm sure some of you have, he said, lazy guys. They're all lazy. You know, that's really, we don't work hard. Henny doesn't work, and Charles doesn't work. We don't work. So we were just too lazy to think of something better. The difficulty we had is we knew what the problem was. We know what the law is, but we still didn't know the facts as this law was being revised. We knew we narrowed down the problem, but not far enough. But what we knew is several things, and there are three features, and it's sort of, it's coming through in the slides here. Is there a tax leakage? Is there a deduction on the one side, an exemption on the other? Clearly that's a problem. There were two other factors. Is this debt really debt? And third is the debt excessive. I'll come back to those issues in a minute. We then met with the industry again, and we had lots of submissions. But the problem with all of these submissions is they want us to do this, they want us to change that, they want this safe harbor, they want that safe harbor. Change this rule, change that rule. And we said, look, we can't do that because you're not giving us the facts. We don't know what's happening in this space, though we know some. But you are not coming forward and describing the transactions. So we know what the theories we're looking for, but we need to apply them to the little facts. And it's like a judge. A judge can't decide the case on theory. A judge goes before court. He must hear the facts on two sides. And so what we did is we put the regulatory discretion in as a way of forcing out the facts. And over the last several weeks, after the legislation was released, we have been meeting continuously with all of the relevant funders. We've been meeting with the banks. We are meeting with the insurers. We are meeting with the pension funds. We are meeting with the boutique houses. We are meeting with the guys who are getting the private equity funds abroad. And as you see the facts, a much clearer picture is beginning to emerge. And that clearer picture shows you that in some areas there is no leakage. In some areas, commerce is driving the transaction and relief is warranted. And in other areas, we have great concerns. So we will be clarifying this in regulation within the year. As a matter of fact, next year, you will probably see legislation modifying this legislation. The purpose of the discretion is to last 2 years. We do not like pre-approvals. It's a problem for SARS, it's a problem for Treasury. But as we clarify the facts, we will come to a new equilibrium, and all of this discretion will be wiped away. But unfortunately, factual gathering takes time. And you need to get from the industry, not the lawyers, you need to get them out of the way, the accounting firms out of the way. You need to talk to the real businesses. And so what we found is, one, is there a tax leakage? In certain places, you can see the definite leakage is there. But then there's a second issue. And that is, what is your level of debt to equity? Do you need to make this much borrowing or not? Because if you need to borrow the money, well, then who are we to say otherwise? But if you look around in the United States model of private equity, the private equity debt to equity ratios are more like 55 to 65%. And there are the founders of private equity. In South Africa, they're 95%. So it tells you there's a problem. And why is that debt becoming so excessive? Because when they look at debt, they look at the taxman and they say, Mr. Taxman, if I call it debt, I get a deduction, right? Yes, sir. If I call it shares, I don't get a deduction, right? Yes, sir. Okay, well, what do you got to do? You got to make sure all your shares look like debt. Because if all your shares look like debt, you get bigger and bigger deductions. If it looks like shares, then you don't get the deductions. So in many cases, you will find that what they call debt is not debt. It's really preferred shares. It's shares where you can pay them when you pay them out of your profits. You pay them when you can. You pay them in kind, in more shares. You often pay them to shareholders, but you've reclassified the shares as debt merely to reduce your tax, to lower your costs. This is a major area of concern. Other areas is that there is one other larger problem the tax system has to face. At what level of debt are we actually funding excessive leverage? This is a harder question. If you look around, the OECD and everybody else talks about this around the world. Debt generates deductions which undermine the corporate tax base. And it encourages companies to take on excessive leverage that they can't handle in the long run. And the question is, does the tax system step in at some point and say, even if this is debt, there just comes a point we don't want to subsidize this anymore. Because your company won't last. And a good example that people talk about, I'm not talking out of turn, is Edcon. Edcon, excessive leverage, 95%. Blew out everything. Well, it was great in the profit times, it'll generate the profit. But once troubles come, that company is heavily underwater. And if one thing we've learned through the economic crisis is, should we be subsidizing excessive leverage? I think the answer is no. The problem is it's an economic question and how do you go forward. So those are the major issues that are before us in the world of the 45. Then, just to go on to a related discussion, and I think I should, you tell me whether I can open to the floor, because I do have till about 3 o'clock, is that just as much as some people play a game of saying, well, again, some of you, just to clarify, if I own a business, I own the shares of a company. So for me to be the business owner, I'm the shareholder. To be the creditor is to be the bank. Banks have debt, shareholders have shares. In the world of tax, it has historically happened that the label wins. So there is so many schemes and variations, and they do this in company law as well, that they call something debt, but it has the features of shares. And they have things that are shares, which really are akin to debt. But they arbitrage the company law, the tax law, the Reserve Bank, whatever they need to do to get to the result. And so you don't look at the underlying. So in many cases, taxpayers in 45 are calling debt, not debt, which is really shares. Then the other game is to call debt shares. Sometimes, if I receive interest income, well, I'm taxable. But if I receive dividends, I'm tax-free. Well, if you tell me I change the label, I change the tax, well, let me call a couple of my friends up in the big law firms, and we'll do exactly that. And so there are questions around debt equity, and they're around all over the world, and they're hard questions, because the features of debt are very complex. And so you have to take a look at that. And what we found was it was the funnel scheme was part of that. And in many cases, what people were doing was they were lending money, getting it back as tax-free dividends. And what they really took all the money in is they loaded the money into offshore bonds. Now, if they received the offshore bond income directly, they'd be taxable. But by putting some shares and companies and some things in between, the taxable interest income becomes tax-free dividends. And so now we have to worry about the other side of the problem. This is also difficult. And what you see there is we went to close that down, and that's what caused all the BEE fights. There were serious concerns about BEE, because BEE is generally funded with preference share funding. It wasn't 45 at all, it was this. And that we were not aware of. And to show you what happens to a typical case like this, the BEE party needs money to buy shares in the target. It goes to the bank. Now, if the BEE party borrows the money from the bank, it's buying shares. There's no deduction. But if the bank earns the income, it's taxable. So the BEE party has no deduction. There's income on the other side, and it's that place where you were fired in those prior charts I showed you. You have a zero and a plus. So many BEE parties borrow preference shares because the bank is tax-free. They don't get a deduction. They use that money to acquire the target. But the shares they use are really like debt because they're guaranteed by a holdco. They're redeemable in 5 years. Shares should last forever. If you're an owner of a company, you should never be forced out after 5 years. Why would you do that? Well, it's because you're not really an owner. You're a creditor. So one of the issues that we had to do was readjust the rules. And we said, generally, if you have third-party funding or you have preference shares with debt-like features, we will shut that down, except if you're using that to fund the purchase of shares, whether you're a BEE party or otherwise. Because when you use the money to fund preference shares, fund the shares with share acquisition, then that you would normally not get a deduction for. And because you can't get a deduction for that form of debt, we will allow you to use preference share funding because you will then basically pass on the benefits to the bank. And it creates a level of tax neutrality. This area of the law, I think, is still being adjusted a little bit. I think generally most of the transactions have been dealt with. There are still some anomalies coming up on some minor issues, and I think you can expect some technical corrections to make sure these deals work. We adjusted the law based on the facts that we had, and now people are coming up with more facts as they fall outside. So we are now looking heavily at those schemes in there. I think that's the basics of the 45. I think maybe I should take questions now, because I think that's the essence.
Honourable members, are there any questions for this part of the presentation? It's the second time we're hearing the same story.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
What? I don't know if you want more detail, I can guess.
I think it's sank in now. Any other additions that you want to add, you and your colleagues?
Okay, yes. Now, I'm going to be moving off a little bit, but Henny's going to take over some individual and savings issues, hit some of the high levels, and he'll hit some of the, I think you just hit the high points. And I'll go back in here. He will also hit for, he's going to talk about the individual and savings, a few top issues like medical student credits, a few of those issues. He will also cover the issues of some of the incentives, like the film incentive in the VCC, and he'll cover the VAT developers and a few of the one or two VAT issues for some of the high levels. And then I'll shoot you from there, and I'll let you take over. I think so. I think people, I think that's different. Yes, where we are. I don't have one of those. My apologies. So do you have one of those?
Keith already addressed this with you. That there was an increase in deduction for medical aid. There are plans on the table next year to move to a credit system, which would basically then favor lower income groups. That's just also covered in slide 11, and in slide 12 is an illustration of what the effect of the tax credit is versus the deduction. And there you can clearly see in the bottom row how it will favor lower income earners.
Sorry for the interruption. Just hold your word, Honorable Mashishiri.
Maybe it's my mistake. You will sort of guide me when to ask this question after listening to the presentation. And I'm not sure what the effect of these amendments would be in terms of the overall tax burden to individuals and to businesses in general, are we really seeing a reform towards relieving individuals of tax burdens, or are we really tightening the screws, squeezing us further? This is the comment I would love to hear at the end of the day around this whole issue. Because for me, I'm a bit concerned that the more year after year new taxes are introduced and literally squeezed, you know, as especially members of parliament, you know, so to speak. I must say this, it's becoming more and more uncomfortable to members. I needed to say this, Chair.
It's very relevant, so put that into your artillery when you answer.
This is a fair point. I think it's a common point, and I think that's where we're at. You see, you've got expenditures. We have lots of things we need to do, and in an economy that was rising, it was simpler. We still have the same things to do that we anticipated before. We have commitments to California and elsewhere, and so you have to meet those commitments. And at the same time, your revenues have dropped. Now, the question is, where do you get it from? Now, the minister has had a difficult time here because the minister has been trying to hold the line. And be careful here in that if we start raising taxes, the income tax, the VAT, and other things, people are going to feel more and more squeezed. Now, part of the squeezing that's been going on, and I feel also squeezed, I feel like I'm in that airplane chair between two people, is that, because I don't know where I'm at, but you and me can't be too far apart, is that we have rising costs on property rates, we have these tolls, we have other expenses, electricity. So the squeezing is coming from exogenous factors of the tax system. But from the moment the minister arrived, he's really been trying to hold the line. And what you see here is trying to make sure that we provide as much relief within the limited envelope that we have to the middle class. There isn't a lot there, while protecting backdoor things. So what you see, and what was not announced, but he's a lawyer, and so am I, but I hang out with the economists a little bit more, is that the charts you saw on the tables, the PIT thresholds, the most important thing you can do to help individuals, not only in terms of the daily lives, but also in terms of savings, is to relieve the bracket burden, to relieve bracket creep. Because the bracket creep is what the main cost of the system is. Your 40% rate kicking in too low. And one of the problems that happened when we inherited the system in 2001 was that people were not adjusting the brackets. And that was what the old government was doing. They were letting everybody get away with everything, and the middle class just kept paying. So if you were rich, you could get your capital gains tax-free. So, for example, if you heard is Buffett. Buffett was talking about his taxes. His taxes are 19%. The reason why is you hardly pay any taxes on capital gains. If you're a salaried worker, like you, every rand is taxed up to 40%. Your investments, though, are taxed at 10 or nothing. So what happened was in the old system, we were giving free rides to the rich while the middle class had to pay. And what Trevor Manuel did from 2001 onward was began taking out the loopholes and pushing it back into the PIT and upping the brackets. In last year, we were only able to give partial bracket relief. This year, we gave full bracket relief plus the bracket relief that we didn't give the prior year before. So even though that's not an exciting thing that all the lawyers will talk about, that's about 8.1 billion worth of rand of relief that affects your daily guy going forward. What Henny was introducing was the thresholds. The thresholds have gone up. So it's about, you can get an exemption, I'm not sure what the numbers are in there, but the exemption levels, you've got to convert the thresholds. So I never get the numbers right when you look at the thresholds. But there's these things called the go down one. If you, one more. And they were jumping all over the place. Thresholds. Is that there were two sets of thresholds, one for under 65 and one for older than 65. So So, for example, if you're at 65 and above, I think you can't seem to find it, is that basically up to about 60,000 of your rand is tax-free. I think it's actually just about 93,000 of your rand is tax-free if you're over 65. And if you are over 75, it goes beyond to about 113 or 114. So the way you do things is you adjust these little rebates, you adjust these brackets for the low and middle classes to give them as much relief as you can. But the envelope is tight. But while you're doing that, you're cleaning up loopholes. So the car allowance, there was no justification. Why should people get an allowance for the car? So we cut back on that. Now, there's some issues around the parliamentarians, and I know that, which is an issue. And the point is that these things like 45, you've got to make sure you don't lose the money there. You try to make sure you keep your protection of the avoidance planning and give as much relief as you can to the middle class within the fiscal envelope that we have. What you're really trying to do is preserve them. But we are in some difficult waters. And like every other country, I think everybody's now in a game of chicken. Because what's happened around the world is that a lot of countries should be raising their taxes now, U.S. especially. And what's happening is they want to not raise taxes to stimulate growth. Or like the U.K., they're dropping the taxes and hoisting it onto the middle class, the exact opposite of what you believe in, but they're the Tory government. And so we're in a position where we can't raise taxes, otherwise we're uncompetitive. But at some point, us, like everybody else, is going to need revenue. Now, hopefully we will grow our way out of it. But we've got to be careful, because growth is a long time coming. We are in a difficult situation. As to the way that goes, well, I think the minister's announcing to MTBS to some extent which way he's going, but I ultimately have to leave that to him. So I don't know if that helps you get a sense of where we're coming from.
To further illustrate this point, you see, my concern is, like you have mentioned it now, that the tax on travel allowance, it affects us a great deal as members of parliament, because we use our own cars to do constituency work, etc., etc. And if you squeeze that too much, like you're doing now, and literally we were left with almost nothing to use for our constituency, as it is happening now. Because what is most unfortunate, Chair, is that the pay structure of members of parliament is such that you think that you have all this money, but at the end of the day you don't have it. The taxman takes it away quicker than we think. You know, that's the unfortunate part of it. So I wanted to make that comment, because we're sitting with the people who make these proposals on a daily basis to government and so on, and they don't realize how bad it affects us as individuals, you know, doing our work, etc., etc. It's you need to rethink this whole structure of numbers. It's not right. It can't be right.
The point the honourable member is making is actually referring to the input made by Mr. Tomaszak, referring to judges in terms of their travelling to do their work. And then I put the question to Mr. Tomaszak, but what about us? We've got to travel to do our work. I've got to travel 1,000 kilometers in one day to get to my constituency and back. And now my enablement is being taxed. But if I were a judge, that's another story. Why can't there be equilibrium? That's the point the honourable member is actually referring to. And that's the questions our colleagues put to us. You know, oh yeah, you are the guys that are passing this boat. Yeah, so that's where it comes from. Ongo Mashile.
Yeah, Chair, maybe to sort that one, maybe as members of parliament, we must deploy an official in treasury. So that then you can really have Chair, but what I just want to raise, Chair, is the assertion that we are given that as we have got the tax relief, but within the tax bracket or whatever. The question that I'm trying to raise is, one has been understanding in the past that there is an intention from Treasury or SARS to widen the tax base. Now, if really we are winning on that, then surely there must be a reciprocity on the tax relief. But currently what I'm seeing here, it's called the bracket creep. It's only just simply to deal with inflation and nothing else. And then, but we the payers, we're getting nothing from the widening tax base. Because we're getting more people to pay, and even those that were avoiding paying, you are actually trying to close the loop, which means it's you should be on the rise on the on the collections, and why not necessarily giving a real relief, not what is it called? Nominal relief that you are giving us, which is just which actually means nothing really. Actually, my question is just about the relationship of widening the tax base to the tax relief of individuals. That's what.
The other reality is the world is holding its breath. If you read yesterday's Business Day, what happened the last 24 hours in global markets, we must go on our knees and pray that there's not a second recession. It's knocking at the door. That is how serious it is. Let me continue.
Let me say this. I mean, I'm hearing you very loud and clear. And look, we didn't just give bracket creep this year. We actually tried to make sure we caught you up from last year. The difficulty we have is we have to make some choices. Because the tax money, if we're raising additional revenue, is that additional revenue going to go into spending? Or is it going to go into tax relief? And in this committee, we like to see the tax relief. But if you're in other committees, there are more programs. People want more roads. They want more soap. They want more medical care. Money has to come from somewhere. And a decision has to be made at some point that people have to understand that you can't have it all. You can't be like back in the U.S. In the U.S., they believe that they can spend to the hilt and they can have tax-free to the hilt. That's basically what the U.S. Congress has done. People have voted. They said, we don't want you to raise taxes, but we want you to spend more money. But money has to come from somewhere. At some point, you have to make a decision. If I make extra money, do I put it into the tax, or do I put it into the expenditure? Now, under the period of 2001 through 2007, we were fortunate, we were growing. So we were able to put some in expenditure, some in tax relief. But suddenly, from 2007 onward, you find that we don't have the money anymore. And so now we're trying to trying to balance what that ratio is going to be. That really is what the February discussions are all about. How are you going to maintain that balance? And right now what you're seeing is we're really trying to hold the line. But there are claims on the expenditure side and claims on the relief side. And that is really something that the Parliament has to sort out overall. Where do you want this budget to go? Forget the details. We get lost in details. What do we want to do with this extra money or the money that we have? But a price will have to be borne somewhere. Somebody's going to have to pay. The other issue is around parliamentarians. Now, there has been some of these discussions, not only here but in the other committee, that there's a feeling that a lot of their allowances aren't being taxed properly. And I'll say what I've said elsewhere, is that if there aren't issues around this, that I think the committee has to come to us, not now, but in January, and go through what's happening. Show us the IRP5 and show us what you're doing. And then we can clarify these things. Because around the travel allowance, if the travel allowance is for your driving to and from various places of work, well, the money is not a salary. It's just subsidizing costs. And if you're not getting full relief for that, you're actually losing money for working harder. And that's not fair. But if people want a tax-free portion of allowance that they're not using for their work, then that's something else. But we don't know. And it's very hard to say. And the judge's situation, we saw, is fairly clear. But we were able to come forward. They presented us that information. But there's been many discussions on the parliamentarian side. And yet, we've not really had a task force to sit down. And it really is not going to take a lot. It's going to take a small group of people showing their IRP5, showing their tax circumstances, and showing what they're doing. And as I said, we've offered that before. I offer that again. And say, am I actually being taxed on my work? If I'm losing money for working, I shouldn't be taxed on it. On the other hand, if I'm making money, well, then I should be taxed like everybody else. And so I do think there's been some noise around this issue, but somehow I just don't think we've gotten the right people in the room to sort it out. So I don't really know what to say. I'm stuck. I need more facts. That's all I'm saying. Anyway.
Johnny?
I hear what has been said here, particularly on this thing. But really, it would seem, Keith, that you guys make it your business to understand the workings of the judges. But then when it comes to politicians, you want to treat it differently. Let these politicians also come and convince us. Because really, the judges are correct. They are traveling to those different courts, and we understand the position that you have taken. But if you care to know their role and the operations of politicians, you would find that it's even more than what the judges are doing in terms of those traveling, which you people who are drafting these tax laws don't want even to think about that one. Because, for example, this 120 that you are giving that gets so much tax and all those things, you are ignoring the fact that I understand the portion that Parliament pays you back from home to airport and all those things. But here, the issue is Parliament has got what they call constituency offices, because those are Parliament offices where members are deployed to go and do work there. And once some of those offices, like Honorable Bihab said, it's far from where you stay. You actually every Monday must go there, start there first, do parliamentary work, because that is parliamentary work, what you do there. And you travel within that particular area or constituency at your own cost. Those are the costs that nobody is talking about. I'm not even talking about party work. We're still talking parliamentary work, right? And that is something that you guys are quite aware of. Then over and above that, you've got what we'll then term as party work, where your party will send from this area to this area, again traveling at your own cost as a member of parliament, who's supposed to go and clarify all different laws and all those things. But that you guys are not taking into consideration. In the same way that you understood the judges, you should be able to understand what I'm telling you now, without wanting us to bring the IRP5s and all those things. It is, you guys know the work of politicians. We are all over the show, but at our own expenses. That's why a lot of people are casually losing interest of being members of parliament, because it's like you are working, but you actually working to fund the very same parliament to carry it out their job, including being squeezed by your own party at the same time, as if you are any huge amount of money. You see. So, but when it comes to charges, it's a different story. It's very unfair. And some of us are beginning to say, for us to be able to pass some of these tech changes, we need to see seriousness insofar as it relates to us. Because there's no one who can speak for us. If judges can speak for themselves and they are listened to, we must also speak for ourselves and must be listened to. Otherwise, some of us will be very reluctant to vote in favor of some of these tax laws, because it's we are passing these laws, but they squeeze us more than any other person. That's why I'm saying, in my understanding, a constituency office, unless I'm told otherwise, a constituency office is not a party office. It's a parliamentary office. In fact, you must call them parliamentary offices. And then we are placed in those offices to do what? Parliamentary work. But traveling in and around those offices, doing all those particular things that we are doing, we understand they are funded, even their nature, they are funded through parliamentary allowance to political parties. You see, that should not cause confusion that these monies are given to political parties. Then political parties. At the end of the day, if those monies are not transferred to those political parties, it will be parliament that will pay the rental, that will pay everything in that office. And then perhaps they will have to buy cars in those offices so that you use your car to that office. And then once you are there, you can take a parliamentary car, use it. And then afterwards, you use to go to airport, because that portion at least parliament pays. And tax men, you still come after that particular portion as well. So, I mean, this is really unfair.
This issue, I think, is... my difficulty here is I hear you, and I've heard this before, and I'm not against it. I'm not trying to block you here. I do think this is the problem. I've raised this a few times. Is that the first thing of all, if you are driving with a car and you're doing all of those things, you should be able to maintain a logbook. That's been our answer from SARS. Now, you might say that's just completely unrealistic. Okay, I hear you. The difficulty that the SARS has had in this area is because the judges thing is different. The judges are getting the car, and there's also that as well. But it does relate. The point is that does the allowance exceed the cost of travel? Is it roughly the same of cost of travel? Is it less than the cost of travel? And I sympathize with that, because I also know that a lot of times I take trips and I don't claim reimbursement, and I find I'm actually losing money at this job. I remember my former DDG complaining, you know, the more I work, the less money I make here. What's going on? And this issue, because I do understand that you have your constituency work, that you have your parliamentarian work, and you're driving around. But you have to understand the issue of cars is a sensitive one, because cars have also been highlighted in the newspapers. But I'm not saying anything. I'm not opposed to this. What I'm saying to you is we keep coming into this thing, and ultimately I can't speak on behalf of the whole group, but I think we have to sit here and get a group of people together. We can fly down and we can go through this. We can come to you and let's sit down and sort this out. Because what's happening is the only time I really deal with this issue is in this room now. And every once in a while we get a committee together, which never happens, and then we don't proceed. I think these issues are solvable. So I'm not fighting you, I'm hearing you. But ultimately, it's when you pass the law, it's just like 45. You sit down, you go through the facts, you clean it up. Because the parliaments don't just have a car issue. They also have some other issues about the secretary and all of these other things. And there are all these other fees. And a lot of them is just subsidized. But different parties do it different ways. And all I'm saying is, again, if you want to have a meeting in January, and you want to call a few people, a small group of this, near two or three people, let's sit down and spend some time, and then let me present the case. But I can't do it based on the information I'm finding here. I'm not trying to block you, and I'm not trying to stall. I'm simply saying, let's take this forward, and let's get beyond this. Because if you feel you're being treated unfairly, and you're being taxed the money you're not making, that's not fair.
Yes, Honorable Mashile.
Yeah, Chair, I'm sure maybe Keith is not understanding what Honorable Chano was saying. You see, Honorable Chano was saying, Treasury, make it your job to understand how parliamentarians operate. Because definitely they are paid every month. I mean, they are paid a salary to really do this kind of work. Therefore, one will be expecting from Keith to say, we will dispatch officials to come and understand or study this particular allowance, how it operates. And then when he has got facts on how this thing operates and how we are taxed and recorded and the rest, is there that in that meeting that he's talking about in January, then we can come and have a debate or a discussion. We can't come at that time and start things, because then that will mean that this committee must now go into technical gear. And we are not employed to do that. We are politicians. We can't go into searching the IRP files and how these things are done. So an official in Treasury, which is interested in knowing how we are taxed and whether we are being taxed fairly, and should deploy an official who will come and do that particular work and find and understand the story. And from there, then you can sit and have proposals or recommendations, then you come and discuss those recommendations. I think that is what I thought I understood from Honorable Chan, and which I seriously support, that they are our officials, and if we make a request, I mean, they must assist us in that specific request, rather than throwing it to us and say no. Come and justify, explain yourselves. If you say you are wrongly taxed, come and explain yourself, then we will listen. We don't expect that. Thanks.
All the members, we noted the proposals for a meeting in January. I want to ask the gentleman that he must indicate to the secretariat what do you need from us in terms of information to assist you to do a preparation for the meeting in January. So when you get here, we go forward. We don't need a second meeting to go forward. So just make a list.
Yeah, I think
what
right.
is the nitty-gritty that you need to make your presentation to us understandable?
I think just to close, sorry about that, is that I think we're talking about who goes forward first. If we need to come forward first, that's fine. I have no problem, and I concede that. I think what I'm saying is we don't necessarily want you to gather the information. I think I follow what your suggestion is, that we just get an agreement to interview a few of you. A few of you are interested in this matter, including yourself, and sit down and say, well, this is my situation. You want to see it from a few different parties. We'll tell you what each interview is. We'll come to you. We'll have a 20-minute interview with each one person. We don't need too many. A sample group. And if we have a sample group, we can get it all together. It's not that hard. And then we'll have to talk to the National Assembly the same way, the guys who are in the standing committee. Have a few interviews, 20, 30 minutes with each person. Say, look, man, this is what's going on in my life. I'm unhappy here. Let's go through it together. So it's all you have to do is present your own facts. Because if you have a sample of four or five of you, I think then we're done. Then we have the facts. That's what you're telling me. It's not going to require a 30-page report. And then we sit down and hear that case. But there are some nuances and differences. So we need to hear that, and then I will take that back to my minions, and then hopefully we can come to a better understanding on this issue. But nobody should tax you if you're losing money. Your business costs should not leave you worse from not only a business side, but from a tax side. That isn't fair. And all I know is we just need to see it. And I'm not trying to be incalcitrant. I really am not. But I do hear you.
Yes, Honorable Mashishiwe and Johnny.
You see, the point also I want to make before you, perhaps as part of the homework going forward, is that in Europe or in America, for that matter, the tax issue becomes very important, you know, and for citizens going for elections and other things. You will notice that here in the country, really we're still grappling with the issues in order to understand what drives taxation and so on. And perhaps once we really understand, then perhaps politics will change and technocrats will change their attitude. Because I want to make this point once more that, look, you are dealing with, of course, taxation, administration, and all that. But again, you are dealing with people. People who are voters, people who are citizens of the country. And you should always bear that in mind, that really this is not a technocrat-driven process only. It must take into account those elements too. You know, I'm saying this because I mean we've been quiet for a long time around these matters, and it's time that we raise our voices, we make our voices heard around them, because it's just too much. You know?
No, Chair, thanks very much. Just my last comment. You see, Keith, you say you usually hear these things in these rooms, and we have been hearing it over and over every year. Whenever you come and make changes to your tax laws, we still can't address this. But nothing from your side has happened in terms of wanting to seriously now attend to this matter and close it once and for all. And that's the call that we are making. We are also tired of raising this particular matter. We want to see seriousness on the side of it. Because you see, some of us, my understanding like now, I understand that you are bringing these changes to us, not only to brief us, they are dependent on whether we agree with you or not. If you don't agree, it means they will not be passed into law. And therefore, if they continue to affect me the way they are continuing to affect me, I will not vote in support of this amendment myself. Others can do that. Majority will rule and then it will be passed. But on this specific one, you see, because I know members of parliament are always compared to judges, but the reality is that judges also decide their own increases, but members of parliament are subject to judges deciding for them. It's one example I'm just making. How inconsistent this comparison is. But the point I want to make here, Chair, is that I agree with the process as outlined by Honorable Mashile. But where I've got a problem, again, it could be lack of understanding of how you do things. But my understanding is that we've got tax laws in this particular country. And from time to time, you sit down and review those laws. And in your review, you check loopholes, where can we better these laws, where can we improve, to do what, to get more money. And in terms of the poor, where there is any chance you will make sure that the poor benefit more than those who earn high salaries. We understand. But I'm not sure if each time you do all these amendments, you go and interview, like, where you are going to do changes in terms of the trust funds and the investment, as to whether you go and interview those investors one by one or samples of them and conclude, or you look at you look on international trends as well as what is the prevailing practices at a particular time, and then come to conclusions, you see, which I guess is what you are doing. I might be wrong, but on others, you do some investigation to get to understand how people does the tax and all those things. And once you've got facts, then you begin to say, we will improve these tax laws to benefit us this way. Because at the end of the day, tax laws, as you have correctly said, are meant to bring income for government so that you can be able, like now, in your introduction here, you are trying to broaden your base and close loopholes to get more money so that government can continue spending, because that's what they're expecting. But really, I'm still emphasizing, it cannot be that every time you broaden your net, we, the legislators, are the first one to be squeezed. You endorse your own squeeze. You are being squeezed, but you are expected to endorse that. Squeeze me. And then No. That's why we are saying now, it should be your responsibility to go and do a thorough research. Information is there. You can get it here in Parliament from the Secretary, from anybody, or even including members if you want to, like you are saying. But it should be your own initiative arising out of this debate that you have been raising for many, many years now. And it must move with speed, really. Otherwise, that's why a lot of politicians now are deciding not even to do their job in their constituencies. If you can check others, you'll find that the whole year go past without going to the constituency. Because why should I have to go to that parliamentary office because he's taking my children's money? And the taxman does not even recognize that. So there's no longer incentive to work in these offices. But those of us who understand that we are here to serve the nation, we still find it very important to go to those offices, serve our communities, share with them what Parliament is doing, take their ideas that influence the work that we are doing here. You understand? Because we are still maybe excited about being a democratic country. Maybe still an excitement. But those who are tired, they are no longer doing this. Majority are moving now into business because they've seen that I being in this thing. It's medical aid is very expensive. It's tax. Like now, it's end of the day. All members are complaining. Hey, I must go and pay 30,000, another one 40,000, another one 5,000. Who are you paying? X-Men. You see, towards this time of the year, members of parliament will become so miserable because we know taxman is coming. And coincidentally, whilst we are trying to go and pay, is the same time that you come to us with your amendment to squeeze us more, and you still expected crying and kicking to endorse. So that's why I'm saying, Nina Chair, no. We can't continue like this. I am not going to be squeezed and continue to endorse. Thank you very much.
It's like you say, enough is enough. I think the picture is very clear for SARS that we set up this meeting for January and they do their homework. They've got some homework to go and do and then meet us in January. If they want to do interviews, they're welcome to do that, to gather information. Are there any other inputs on the legislation in front of us now that you still want to make?
Yeah, Chair, I think on the rebate, because on the thresholds, one is understanding the influence of inflation or rugged creep, whatever they call it. But then on the rebate, I would just like to understand what informs the changes and also what informs just the quantum. Because as you see, you on the current rebate on all natural persons, you're saying it's 10,000. Now the proposed rebate is 10,755, which means there is something like 515, I think. No, 415 or something increase in that. What informs that 400 and something? Where does it actually? What says it should be that, or not 1,000, or not 200? If one can just understand that, except that the annotations of saying all natural persons, and then whether people above 65 are not natural persons, I don't know. I think it's just a problem of just really annotating this particular table. I think that's generally what I just want to understand.
Any other questions that we can finish off the legislation, go into the rest of the agenda? Nothing? You may reply.
Well, I think, look, unfortunately, I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage because I'm a lawyer, I'm not an economist. So I can only tell you indirectly that the way things usually go is one of the main issues that we discuss every year is the issue of personal income tax relief. And the question is, how much money is available? Where is it going to come from? And so you're always balancing a general pool at first. The first thing is how much money, because that's usually if we have lots of money at the macro level, at the large level, that's where it's been allocated for the last number of years. So the first thing you do take a look at for taxpayers is what is the inflation rate? And what? How much money do you need to allocate to cover the inflation rate? In this case, what really informed us, really with the primary and secondary rebates, and the problem is I don't have the conversion into what this means. I know roughly that if you're 65 and older, it's about $92,000 is tax-free. I'm not sure how much it is with the primary rebate. Probably about $30,000 or $40,000 is tax-free. I just don't have the numbers in front of me. You typically, what you're doing is you're trying to provide, you're looking at overall inflation, make sure everybody gets that, and if there's money left over, you skew it to the lower end. And so what was going on generally, and again, I don't have the formulas for it, is that the first thing is the inflation, and the second thing, as you said rightly, is in the year of 2009, you didn't get full inflationary relief. So what informed most of these tables was making sure you got full inflation for this year and you caught up for the shortfall of the prior year. And unfortunately, the money that's available is based on how much money you're getting and how much money you spend it. And so we felt that we had the ability to do that, and that's what drove most of the numbers. The only issues that got a little skewed at a higher level was for people over 65 and 75. And what you find is they have rising medical costs. In addition, they're also finding themselves in a situation where interest rates have dropped. So they're not only suffering rising costs, they're rising additional costs for medical, and they're also finding they're getting less income because the interest in this world has dropped. So while you and I enjoy borrowing at a lower rate, they're receiving less. So that is what informed as a generic matter. As to the tables and the exact calculations, unfortunately, Cecil Morton is not here, and I would have to leave that and defer that to him. I'm the lawyer. I let them do their calculations. But that's conceptually what informed us. And I think that's all I can say as a lawyer. I don't think I can give you more. I wish I could.
What? So we are not correcting to take a decision. That's a problem now.
I think sometimes maybe Keith may not be the right person to take certain decisions or assist us to take certain decisions. You see, Chair, is that annually, you know, it's if the tax collection increases about 20 to 30%. That means more money is available to grow the economy, whether it's to sustain, but eventually to grow it. But now the question that arises, Chair, is that what is the point of growing, say, the infrastructure? You grow the infrastructure that the infrastructure grows faster than the citizens themselves. Like what we have done now, spend a lot of money in Gauteng and build a toll. But then what is left with the disposable income in the hands of these individuals? They cannot actually run on those toll roads. You know, it's probably these are some of the things that we needed to discuss. Because as much as you collect the tax from people, really, we must the disposable income in the hands of the people also. It must show some little bit of growth so that they are able to use even this infrastructure that is being provided. Otherwise, then it's going to be used by others. If they continue to use this infrastructure that we talk about, the house trade and the rest, probably that will indicate the level of indebtedness of citizens. That's why we say we may be talking about the debt levels in our own people. You'll find that they will be going up if the tax goes up and up. That means people to match. Then they must borrow more from, and then also the savings then are likely to go down. And so we need to debate this sometimes, and then not necessarily just waiting to talk about these things, really talk the politics of this of the fiscal. Thank you.
Any response from you?
I wholeheartedly agree. See, as you say, I'm a technocrat. I am a technocrat. Now, the bottom government guarantee thing, that's more in my zone. It's not going to affect the overall revenues to a macro level. But the point is, at the end of the day, a government needs to spend a certain amount of money, and it needs to pay for it. And it pays for it in two ways. It raises taxes, and it borrows. And the combination of spending, borrowing, and taxing, that is an overall question that has to be done. And the less you spend means the more the people can keep. But the more people can keep, the less you're going to spend. The less, and you can only borrow so long. That combination is really is beyond my level. It really is at the ministerial level. It's at the DDG level. And you see me coming in, and then we start debating it. And yes, I concede completely. I think you're 100% correct.
Thank you. Thank you for the team from SAS. All the members with that picture, which is, I think, very clear to SAS what our frustrations are. I put the legislation out to the committee. Consider our report that will be going to the House. And I'll read it as it is tucked here in front of me. The report of the Select Committee on Finance on the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill B-19 of 2011, dated the 22nd of November 2011. That the Select Committee on Finance, having considered and examined the Taxation Laws Amendment Bill B-19 2011, Section 77, referred to it and classified by the JTM as a money bill, reports that it has agreed to the bill without amendments. Now the same will go to the Taxation Laws Second Amendment Bill, B-20 of 2011, which is a Section 75 legislation bill. I put it to the committee. Must it be National Assembly? Are you sure? All the members? Can we just go on the record? Are there any proposal?
Chair?
Yes, sir.
What I was just simply questioning, Chair, here is what is sitting in brackets there on the heading National Assembly, Section 77? What is that?
Why is it?
Because we are in the NCOP, and if one can just get clarity on that one, so that we are able to move. I know the reservations of Honourable Chang about that. I'll be moving for that, you know, for the adoption. But after clarity on that, whether it's correct, that in sessions of National Assembly.
Mrs. Groenewald?
Isn't it the house in which the bill was introduced that is attached in brackets after? If it was introduced in the... Sorry, I think the brackets National Assembly means the house of introduction of that particular bill, if I'm not mistaken.
The reduction in the National Assembly then referred to us. So this is a technical way to write it. I just want to get the clarity.
Yeah, Chair, I really still want the Chair to verify that it is correct. But the body of the report is fine, and then I move for the adoption, Chair.
There's a move for adoption, is there a seconder for the proposal? Is there a seconder for the proposal? I just put it on record, Honourable Becker. We can't hear.
Okay, we support it.
Let's go on record. Thank you, Honourable Members. But with the agreement that our first meeting in January is with us to kick off the year's program in 2012, which is actually a very important meeting. you to you and your team. Yes, Honorable Mashele.
I'm not sure, Chair, because you have got two reports here. Have you put all of them at the same time?
I referred to both, yes, but
is that correct?
Just to satisfy you, I'll read the other one in full. The report of the Select Committee on Finance on the Taxation Law, Second Amendment Bill B22 of 2011, National Assembly, Section 75, dated 22nd of November 2011. The Select Committee on Finance, having considered and examined the Taxation Law, Second Amendment Bill B20 of 2011, National Assembly, Section 75, referred to it and classified by the JTM as a Section 75 bill, reports the bill without amendments.
Yes, I propose for the adoption,
Chair. Honorable Becker. Thank you, all the members. We will release the team. Thank you for being here. That's one thing. You will never be bored in this committee when they interact with us. You are released. We will do the minutes just in a minute's time. Just want to sign this.
But Chair, he's not allowed just to create confusion so that we can intervene.
But you must actually take his telephone number. Thank you. Honourable members, that brings us to the second part of our meeting, and that is that we have to deal with six sets of minutes, and we will be dealing with the minutes of the 19th of October, when we dealt with the Government Employees Pension Law Amendment Bill, Free State Oversight Report, as well as outstanding minutes. Minutes of the 19th of October. You've got the copies in front of you. I put to you page 1. Page 2.
No, thanks, Chair. Before I move, Chair, can we be appraised as to, ever since the adoption of this Free State Report, we never saw it on ATC until today. What's actually the hold up there? Because it's supposed to be one of those reports that will go before the House before we arrive.
I've got the amended report as the committee amended that specific day when we dealt with this report, and I requested Mr. Nkize that before it is ATC to read through it again. That is technically, in terms of language, correct. I've just received the final copy. It's lying in front of me. I will go through it after this meeting, because I've just received it. I worked on it until today, after several phone calls was made. The excuse was they were tied up with the other reports in terms of Money Bills Act to get that also tabled and adopted. So it is here, and we will press for the ATC to be ATC this week.
I move for adoption of the minutes.
Yes, adoption. A mover for the adoption. Any seconder? Any seconder? Just see that you were present.
Yeah, Chair, I think on the 19th I was present, Chair. Yes, and,
thank you.
I'm happy to second it.
Thank you. We also afterwards. Then, honorable members, the second set of minutes is of the 26th of October. It was a briefing by the Minister of Finance on the MTBBS. That was done jointly with the Standing Committee on Finance. I put you page 1. Page 2. Seconder, Honorable Becker, thank you. The minutes of the 1st of November, public hearings on the revised fiscal framework. Page 1. Just check if you were present, apologies, etc. Three. submission from Mr. van der Merwe regarding the question put at that meeting by Honorable Mashile.
Is here, Chief?
Is it here?
Yes.
Because it's very important in terms of the it's very important in terms of the consideration in the House. Honourable members, I put to you the minutes of the 16th of November 2011. Honourable Lise moves for adoption. Seconded. Honourable Mashile seconds. Honourable members, thank you very much for your cooperation in terms of the procedures of this meeting. There's one outstanding report we still have to do with. That is the report on our visit to Northwest municipalities. Tomorrow, we are meeting with three municipalities from that province. And after that, that report will be, the report is actually compiled already. We just have to complete tomorrow's meeting. And that findings will also go into the report. That report will be circulated to Honorable members, and we request the Honorable members to make the input on the report. I've gone through it already. I gave it to Mr. Nkize to go through it as well in terms of the technical and the language issues. That we schedule a meeting to deal with this, that report for next week, if possible, because we haven't got time on our side. The last day for reporting in the House will be the 6th of December. There is a plenary for the 7th, but that's the day the President will be addressing again the National Council of Provinces. So I just want to give the Honourable Members what is still awaiting us and what we have to do. And then, Honourable Members, it was mentioned in one or two meetings, are we anticipating going on a study tour? Well, the answer is yes. I want the inputs from the Honourable Members as well to assist us. That you on one piece of paper, A4 size, put down your ideas. What do you expect? What is your proposal? That we dovetail this, and that the two chairs, Select Committee for Finance and the Select Committee for Appropriations, with the whip of the committee, and the researchers sit with the secretaries and see what can we put on the table, because our time is running out for study tours. In terms of the Select Committee for Finance as well as appropriations, that we can dovetail it in that way. Honorable Mashishiwe and Honorable Mashile.
Now, Chair, you and Honorable Chana, Chair, should simply run with the board and the researchers, do some investigation as to which countries can really suit us in terms of what we want to see happening as a committee of on finance and appropriations. So you don't have to really come back to us and ask us. Just do it, Chair. Please.
Okay. There's a proposal by Mashile.
Yeah, Chair, I second the proposal, Chair. I really second the proposal that you look at the countries that are doing better than us, or those that looks to be in grip with the issues of finance and expenditures, that we have got anything to learn, but also, you know, to give us chance to actually get out of these boundaries of South Africa. But one thing for sure, Chair, is that with the national work or duty that we are having for the whole of next year, the likelihood is that if this thing goes beyond, say, the February or the end of January, it may be a little bit difficult to get permission to get out. So this must be done in the speed of light. Probably then we can have Christmas out there. Thank you.
Yeah, just remember it's white Christmas in Europe, not in America. I was there last year.
I thought that we need to hear what Honorable Chan is saying behind me. He is proposing that we go to Swaziland.
to the oversight in Swaziland, yes. What's happening to our money?
No.
Thank you for that light note. Tomorrow morning, Mr. Hintu, what time? Oh, 9 hours in the old assembly chamber. It's the three municipalities with all the leading departments. It's going to be a very important meeting. There's municipalities and we are starting with appropriations to do the report.